We are joined by three representatives from Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools to talk about a very big issue that is already facing the school district and will continue to face the district for several years to come. We're talking about facilities maintenance and construction and repair of existing buildings and the amount of money it's going to take to make it all possible. Joining us here in the studio right now are Todd LaFreeze, the Assistant Superintendent for Support Services, Bill Mullen, the Executive Director of Facilities Management for the school district, and Julian Lacerna, the principal of Carrboro Elementary School. Thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Todd, I want to start with you. This issue was sparked or, I guess, catalyzed or driven by a facility study that was presented to the Board of Education at their last meeting, where a lot of the specific details really began to come out about what the issues are in existing schools, especially our older buildings, Carrboro Elementary being one of them, and exactly how much it's going to take to get those facilities up to date and repaired. So what was the what was the outcome of the study?
So, sure, this was a study that took us a little bit over a year to complete. But generally, what the study examined 10 of our older schools and facilities and looked at the buildings from an architectural standpoint, from a mechanical standpoint, and then also from an educational standpoint. And so, generally, the findings across these 10 schools were that there's significant interior and exterior repairs that are needed. Things like complete HVAC system replacements, lighting upgrades, floor replacements. The facilities have code issues in terms of handicap accessibility or life safety code upgrades that are needed. They're short on the spaces for supporting education that we would provide in a new school today. And then things that are on everyone's mind nowadays post the tragedy that happened in Connecticut is making sure that our facilities are safe and secure. And so a lot of these older facilities are also campus-style buildings, which are much harder to contain.
Jillian, your school is Carrboro Elementary School. It's more than 50 years old. It's almost 60 years old. Third oldest building in the school district. Second oldest classroom facility, Glenwood Elementary, the only one that's older. What are some of the day-to-day problems that you face and that teachers and students in the school face that you have to deal with?
So many of the things that Todd spoke about apply to Carrboro Elementary School. So things from having a campus-style layout with students moving in between buildings. We have sometimes leaks that occur that we have to deal with. And, of course, with the heavy rain over the summer, mm-hmm. we face flooding. In addition, we lack office spaces that you would traditionally see in newer buildings. So to house specialists, interventionists, and support personnel that are working with students in the classroom. And I think the challenge is when these building things come up in the building, it takes away from the focus on instruction, mm-hmm. which is really what we need to be spending most of the time on.
So what's the direct impact that we're seeing on the quality of education?
So I think it's highly impacted when we also increase enrollment and become short on space. So when mm-hmm. we become short on space in the building, in the older facilities, we end up using spaces that are not ideal as classroom spaces. We had to knock down a wall at Carrboro a couple years ago to create a space for our classroom that we just didn't have. Mm-hmm. And then the impact of that is when you turn those spaces into classrooms, you end up having to share office spaces. So last year, before we redistricted, we had four intervention teachers sharing one space for an office. And we had some administrators also sharing office space. So you become very compacted in the room that you have.
And I want to turn to Bill Mullen in just a second, but something that you just said, Jillian, prompted a question that I wanted to turn back to Todd and ask, what are the projected, because a lot of the repairs and new facilities that are planned, there's another middle school being planned for the district coming up soon. How much does all of this have to do with projected increases in the student population? And what is projected in terms of the increase in student population in the coming years?
Well, our student enrollment numbers have been basically steadily increasing over the past two decades, and our projections show that trend will continue mm-hmm. Somewhere between 1% and 2% a year. What's been happening just in terms of capital funding is that the capital funding in the community has basically been going into building new construction. Mm-hmm. And there has been little capital funding available to treat these older buildings or make repairs to our older mm-hmm. facilities.
And those have been big projects. Northside Elementary, of course, just opened and great new building. But
sure.
the focus has been on that and not so.
The capital funding has primarily been going to new buildings.
So there is a capital investment plan, and I want to turn it now to Bill Mullen, who's the Executive Director of Facilities Management. There is a capital investment plan. It's a 10-year plan, but it's $20 million for the next 10 years for school funding and for school construction and repair. What is needed financially in terms of construction and repair on older buildings to bring these buildings up to speed?
Well, if you look at the assessment, if you look at the assessment results, they first identify a baseline of what is needed at each school, and a baseline for the 10 facilities is in the neighborhood of $52 million. Mm-hmm. This includes everything from HVAC systems to electrical systems to structural repairs to site improvements. It includes everything. And that would equate to what we should have in our capital plan over the next 10 years if we were fully funded.
So what you mentioned a couple of different things that the repairs include. Is there a longer list of needed repairs?
We only, in our current CIP, we only have a bare minimum of what is needed. Mm-hmm. In order of magnitude, the assessment identified over $7 million in electrical improvements and renovations that are needed. We have about $1.5 million. They identified over $10 million of HVAC improvements, and we have about $1.7 million. We are woefully underfunded when it comes to ADA compliance. We would have to spend in the neighborhood of $5 million to bring the schools up to ADA compliance, and we have less than $1 million. So that gives you a sense of how far off we're at.
I know this is a difficult question, but what of that is the most urgent in terms of need to fix things now?
Well, I can answer that with an example. Mm-hmm. Safety comes up to the top of the list. The assessment identified at Colberth Middle School as having a deficiency in structural support. The building could not have been built under today's code and requirements. It found that there were insufficient structural beams in the school to support the exterior brick masonry. So this summer, we spent $250,000 to going in there and installing approximately 90 support beams throughout the whole school, just to bring it up to current code and to safety conditions.
So that's at Colberth Middle School. At Carver Elementary School, which is one of the older buildings, I want to turn it back to Jillian Lacerna. What is the most urgent need for you right now and for Carver Elementary? You're smiling already. I think there's a lot of different things that need a lot of different needs.
I think if you ask the staff, they would probably point their concern, I think, is we struggle with the HVAC unit so much, and I'm not sure if the study ranked that as the number one priority for Carver, but I know on a day-to-day basis, we know the names of all the repair people that come out to work on our facility often. And that really can get in the way, especially at this time in the beginning of the year when it's still really warm outside. And then in the middle of the winter, people have to come out there. And they're great about coming out quickly to fix what we have. But it's just ongoing maintenance. It becomes the time when we were talking about the HVAC units for the district where we probably should repair rather than continuing to bandage the problem.
So those are all the problems that the older buildings face in the school district. And I want to turn, we got to take a break here in a second, but as we take a break, I want to turn to LaFreeze and ask him to have the last word in this first segment of this panel and talk about the proposals that were presented to the board in terms of making all these repairs and getting the schools up to date and what the process is and what the timeline is.
Sure. Well, generally, we presented three different options to the board. The first one Bill talked about, which was that base level of repairs and renovations. But that didn't address anything in terms of the safety and security, the layout of the campus-style facilities. And so a different option, option two, seeks to start addressing some of those things, but also address capacity issues at the schools. A lot of these schools are relying on mobile classrooms, and so option two, I think, was in the neighborhood of about $115 million, and it looks to add some small additions to some of these schools to provide some increased capacity and support space. And then there was a third option, which is approaching $200 million, which includes all of those renovations. It includes deconstructing facilities that have probably exceeded their useful life, and then building new additions. And so that approach is a much longer term approach and seeks to address a lot of the challenges that these old schools face.
Which of those is the board leaning toward? Which of those is the staff leaning toward?
Well, right now, this is where we are in terms of the work that's been done so far. We still have some work to do directly with the schools, and our intention is to get out to the schools and work directly with key staff, building principal, other staff in the school, and develop a fine-tuned recommendation at each specific site. We wanted to present the board with just a big overview in terms of the different types of needs that are out there.
Todd LaFries, Jillian Lacerna, and Bill Mullen joining us here in WCHL studios to talk about the need for repairs and construction at Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools. That is the need. When we come back, we'll talk about the cost and different cost effectiveness measures. That's on the way after this. Now it's time to turn to the more contentious issue, presumably, which is the cost. There is $20 million budgeted in the 10-year capital investment plan for repairs, but the facility study that was presented to the board at the last meeting and a lot of the proposals range up into the hundreds of millions of dollars. So, Todd LaFries, I want to begin with you. The repairs and the construction that are needed in the district, what is the plan for funding those?
Well, first, as I mentioned, we need to develop a list of final recommendations, and we're going to do that over the next few months here. And then the next big question is identifying the funding. Mm-hmm. We had a conversation. We had a joint boards meeting last week with the Orange County Commissioners as well as Orange County Schools. Orange County Schools has similar needs to our school system. They're starting their study now. But I think the conversation that unfolded that evening started heading down the path of a bond.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of looking ahead at the projected cost, and obviously it's going to be a difficult conversation, as it always is when something this big comes up, what measures are being talked about or thought about or are already being implemented in terms of streamlining the cost for these new repairs?
Well, I think from the school system's perspective, and this was a conversation at the board meeting that we had held, that was held the week prior to, is that we first need to finalize our recommendations based on what we believe are in the best interest and the needs of the school system. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be our approach. And then what we then need to do next is work with the county commissioners to identify what's available in terms of funding and then develop a prioritized list of projects.
One of the more common, I think, ways of cutting costs in districts, and we've seen this in a number of different school districts, and I think to an extent, I think to an extent here in Chapel Hill Carborough, and we should mention at this point that this is actually not an isolated conversation that Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools are having. Wake County is having the same exact conversation on a much larger scale because there's more people in the district. One of the things that they've done in schools is add mobile classrooms, trailers outside. That's definitely a possibility that has been talked about and implemented at various districts as a cost-cutting measure. But I want to turn it to Jillian Lacerna and Bill Mullen to talk about that as a possibility and other things that you could do to cut costs. What would Jillian, I'll start with you. How would you feel as a principal about adding mobile classrooms as a possible solution to make it a little bit less costly?
Well, currently, Carborough has one mobile classroom, and Bill can tell you we're trying to get rid of it right now. Mm-hmm. So, Bill, I'll let you talk about mobile classrooms on a larger scale. I think that...
What are the issues for you as a principal?
So, mobile classrooms... One of the problems, I think, with mobile classrooms, as with the facility, is that the mobile classroom is put into place, and the room that we have right now is... probably over 30 years old, and mm-hmm. it's time for it to go. So as with the building needing repairs, our mobile units also end up needing maintenance and repairs. They're also isolated. So when you talk about movement across buildings and transitions of students in and out of classrooms, you're going outside the building into the mobile classroom and then back out.
Mm-hmm.
And so ideally, we like to have our students be able to access different locations in the school, staying within the building if possible. Mm-hmm.
Trying to generate that sense of community, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a lot of cases where students are having to go from building to mobile classroom and back and forth?
So at our school, we only have one. And as I said, many other schools in the district have more than that. And we use it as a specialist class. So our world language class is in that classroom. So the students are going in and out of that classroom all day long.
That's the state of affairs at Carborough Elementary. Bill Mullen, I wanted to turn to you to talk a little bit more about just sort of the general effects of mobile classrooms.
Jillian is fortunate that she only has one mobile in her campus. Overall, the district has 54 mobile classrooms, which equates to over 50,000 square feet of space. It's a small little school, a school in and of itself. The mobiles, and there's 27 of those mobiles exist at elementary schools. And they are more intricate in their needs because usually the younger children need the proximity to bathrooms and or the main building. So they're a little they're more expensive to put in.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit of the mobile is its relative speed in putting it in. You can start in the spring and have it most of the time up and running in August.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the cost effectiveness of it, it is for a 1,000 square foot approximately unit. The last one we put in was about $270,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not cheap, and long term, they are a nightmare when it comes to maintenance. It's wood frame construction. We're constantly replacing stairs and ramps and wood exterior. Their HVAC system is just a wall-mounted exterior heat pump that is terribly inefficient. It's just they're a maintenance nightmare.
Can I interject something there? Many of our mobile classrooms are now at the point where they too need extensive repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you start heading down the path to where you're having a conversation about replacing roofs or replacing HVAC systems or the whole lighting system or the whole flooring system in a temporary facility, it's just nuts.
Yeah. What other either Bill or Todd can jump in on this or Jillian? What other cost cutting measures are being talked about over and above mobile classrooms?
I'll speak to that. One thing that, depending on the approach that we take, if we take an option two or an option three approach and put additions into these facilities, one, we are able to eliminate mobile classrooms at all of our elementary schools if we do all the repairs that are being recommended in the report.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that it does is it increases school capacity. And so that pushes off the need for perhaps that next elementary school number 12, outside mm-hmm. of 10 years. Some of the work at the middle school or the high school level could push the need for high school addition or perhaps middle school 5 out another 2 or 3 years, pushing those closer to the end of the 10-year capital plan.
And the option that increases capacity is increasing capacity by more than 700 students.
Well, it increases capacity at the it would increase capacity at all school levels, which pushes off the need for building a new school. And so delaying new construction delays millions of dollars. And our north side was over $20 million. But if you look at building a school 10 years from now at the elementary level, it's probably going to be over $30 million.
Mm.
So pushing off those needs in a way is a cost savings effort.
And then going from the newer schools to all the way back to the oldest school or the oldest school building in the district, which is the Lincoln Center, the administrative building, now more than 60 years old. What are the problems that you face there? And what is the benefit of maintaining that building as the district headquarters?
Well, from a facility standpoint, the challenges at Lincoln Center are very similar to those that are at the older facilities. The HVAC system is antiquated. It needs to be replaced. Lighting system upgrades, flooring, ceiling tiles. The whole facility needs a complete overhaul. But then we have other issues. There's insufficient parking on site. And so we have professional development space that we can't use during the day because there isn't parking for people to come to the facility.
Mm-hmm. Because we talked to Tom Frisella a couple of weeks ago, and that was his top priority or one of them.
The layout of the facility, it was designed to be a school, not a central office. And so mm-hmm. there's inefficiencies that happen with how the facility's laid out. But again, I just in terms of the overall repairs, the facility has the same issues as our other old schools.
Is it most cost effective to keep administrative offices there and repair the building as opposed to looking for a different location for them?
Well, our approach and what our thinking is at this time is if we were going to keep administrative offices on site.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best course of action would be to do a deconstruction of the existing facility and build new on site. There's another thought that we're discussing, which is to perhaps return Lincoln Center to an educational facility of some
mm-hmm.
sort, and then look to build a new central office elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are conversations that we just initiated with the school board. We'll continue to have them as administration. And then fine-tune a recommendation in that area.
And a lot of different conversations going on. We got to wrap things up. It's almost 4:30 here. Again, thank you guys so much for coming. Todd, I want to sort of begin wrapping things up with you. What are the next steps now in terms of the conversation?
For our next step, we'll meet with schools, directly with school principals and key staff in the building, and develop a fine-tuned recommendation at each specific site, and then we'll bring those forward to the Board of Education. All along the way, we need to keep in close contact with the county commissioners, as well as Orange County schools, just so everyone is in tune with what our recommendations are, and then so we can understand what's happening at the county school level and as what's happening from a funding perspective from the county commissioners.
And Bill Mullen, Executive Director of Facilities Management, what is next for you while that conversation is going on? What are you guys doing now?
Well, we're, as Todd mentioned, we're fine-tuning the recommendations and findings of the report to make a comprehensive recommendation to our school board. And I just wanted to go back to one point we made earlier, if I may. We mentioned that there was $52 million of baseline maintenance and repairs that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we were comparing that to our current CIP of $20 million. But the $20 million in our CAP not only takes care of these 10 schools, but the other 8 schools we have. And over the course of the next 10 years, those other 8 schools, the newer schools, start to age.
Are going to become those 10 schools,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
McDougal Middle School would be 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
East Chapel High School, 27. These are years that usually you incur some very large expenses when it comes to maintenance.
It's incredible that East Chapel Hill High School is going to be 27 years old so soon, but yeah, that is definitely the case. And then finally, Jillian Lacerna, a principal of Carbro Elementary, which is, again, the second oldest school in the district in terms of classroom space. What are you doing, and what is staff doing in order to get by, essentially, while this conversation is going on?
So the staff is the strength of our building and the students and the families. And so they're going to keep doing what they do best, which is just a focus on teaching and learning. I think our school improvement team and our teacher leaders in the building were very happy to see the facility study occurring last year and are really looking forward to working with district administration to look at the priorities for Carbro Elementary School and how we can go forward and advocate for our building.
Todd LaFreeze, Jillian Lacerna, Bill Mullen, thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
All right, 4:32 is the time, and that concludes our forum. Thanks again to Todd, Jillian, and Bill. Jeff Nash, also from Chapel Hill Carbro City Schools, joining us here in the studio, sans microphone, but a very big part of this as well.